marginalizing a campus pro-life group.
Stuck in the back corner with doors closed, this is where they want us. They think they've won when they've sent us to a corner, the doors are closed, there's trigger warnings up. This is the place where they want to have this discussion, out of the public eye, in a corner where people aren't going to stumble upon it. And I think that's the sad part about how the discussion is going, that they're ideally happy when this is not being discussed.
On the feature today, an interview on an art display that prompted a so-called trigger warning on a BC university campus. In the news, ARPA presents on transgenderism at Hamilton City Hall, a different approach to grassroots activism. The Trinity Western case is headed to the Supreme Court of Canada. And another example of weak laws protecting the unborn.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA's Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schutten, was at City Hall in Hamilton, Ontario yesterday, appearing before Council's Audit Committee. He was there to talk about a proposed protocol the city is considering on transgenderism. That protocol, among other things, would open up all city-owned bathrooms and change rooms to those who identify as something other than their biological sex. Schutten says he's hoping his presentation made an impact.
It was very difficult to get across all the things that needed to be said because we were limited to only 5 minutes, and so much more can be said than what I was able to present in 5 minutes. We invited two other Reformed pastors from the Hamilton area to also present. So they covered more that pastoral angle, and I could focus on the legal and policy angle. So speak to my strengths and credentials in that regard. I have a certificate in human rights law. I have a master of laws in constitutional law. So I'm hoping that they internalized some of that perspective, those credentials, as I spoke to how that protocol could be improved.
As to the substance of what he said, there were several points.
One of the problems with the protocol is that it confuses gender and sex. It's somewhat ironic, actually, because those transgender activists that are advocating for these kinds of policies that allow biological males who identify as female into female washrooms, they have often repeated the mantra that gender is completely distinct from sex. And yet, segregation of washrooms is actually on the biological characteristic. Washrooms have always been segregated according to sex, not gender. And yet, they're saying it's because of their gender identity, not their sexual identity, that they now want to enter a sex-segregated bathroom. And from a legal perspective, the Ontario Human Rights Code itself actually lists three instances where it allows for the segregation of services according to sex.
Hamilton City Council is expected to make a decision on the issue sometime this spring. We'll keep you posted when that happens. ARPA's manager of grassroots engagement was on the road last week. Colin Postma made a number of stops in BC and Alberta, trying to find new ways to get folks engaged.
We had individual brainstorming going on, and then after that, the group would put their ideas together, and then it would cycle around the room in a couple of different cycles. The purpose and the goal of the whole presentation was to really get people inside of the ARPA mentality, coming up with new ideas for how to engage. We focused on three areas. The one is engaging with members of parliament, councillors, our elected officials. Another area was engaging with Reformed Christians to get them more involved, educated, and equipped. And then the last category is doing public demonstrations or displays to get the public's attention on some of the issues that we deal with.
The trip also included meetings with supporting churches, pastors, and school groups. There was an interesting development in the Alberta education sector last week. The minister responsible, David Agan, appears to be backing away from plans to insist that all schools, including independent and Christian ones, have to live by Bill 10 and the province's policies on transgenderism in the classroom. He told the National Post that an inquiry into two Edmonton area schools, which are refusing to follow the policy, has unearthed unexpected legal implications, and that the situation is, quote, more complicated than they'd originally foreseen. ARPA education consultant Harry Bowes.
For more than 2 months, he has had a copy of a report and recommendations from Inquirer Dan Scott. I think Minister Reagan is realizing that also faith-based students need to be able to go to a school where they feel safe and that the education also is conducted in a caring model. Minister Egan is stepping back and recognize that the rule of law does need to respect the religious rights of parents. Proverbs 11, verse 14 comes to mind for me. In an abundance of counselors, there is safety. Minister Egan has accepted the advice of his counselors.
There's no indication on when that report might be released. the Trinity Western Law School case heading to the Supreme Court of Canada. Late last month, the court granted leave to appeal two cases, a BC case which came down in favor of the school, and an Ontario case that went the other way. There's already a precedent of sorts on this. Back in 2001, the High Court ruled that the BC Teachers College would have to accredit graduates from Trinity's education program as teachers in that province. ARPA lawyer John Sycamore says we shouldn't read too much into the Supreme Court's decision to have another look at the principles involved in this.
I don't think it's surprising that the Supreme Court has granted leave to appeal when you have the Court of Appeal in BC and the Court of Appeal in Ontario reaching opposite decisions, and the BC Court of Appeal taking the Ontario Court of Appeal to task for its decision in certain ways. That alone, I think, makes this not surprising that leave to appeal has been granted.
The case will likely be heard this fall or early next year. ARPA will be applying for intervener status. And police in Toronto made an announcement last week that has restarted the discussion about criminal charges in cases where pregnant women are murdered and their unborn child dies as a result of the attack. The announcement centered on the death of 33-year-old Candace Bob of Etobicoke. She was shot and killed in a drive-by last May. She was 5 months pregnant at the time. Detective Sergeant Mike Carboni with the Toronto Police Homicide Unit says the woman's baby was delivered by emergency cesarean section. Kyrie Bob lived for several weeks before dying of injuries sustained in the shooting.
Today, I'm informing the public that as a result of a continuing investigation and based on information available to us at this time, if the offender or offenders are identified and arrested, they would also be charged in the homicide of baby Kyrie. It's a very, very complicated part of the law. You know, we consulted with very senior prosecutors, and based on that consultation, we've come to this decision.
The complicated part of the law he refers to is Section 223 of the Criminal Code, which says, quote, a person commits homicide when he causes injury to a child before or during its birth, as a result of which the child dies after becoming a human being. Mike Schutten with We Need a Law says the fact that it took police almost a year to come to this decision shows what's wrong with the current legislation.
The Crown is grappling with this because there is such an incredible hypocrisy. If the child would have died in utero and not been born first, they would have no problem just asking for the one charge, dealing with the pregnant mother. It's just very interesting how it's taken nearly a year for the police to come out and say, we're actually pursuing somebody in this instance who has committed two crimes, two murders, according to the criminal code. But it goes to show how Canada's lack of any protection for children right up to the moment of birth is what's at play here.
Last year, Parliament declined to pass Cassie and Molly's Law, a private member's bill that would have automatically mandated charges in cases like this. Back with more in 30 seconds.
ARPA chapters in Ontario have launched a radio campaign to raise awareness about Bill 89. The minister responsible for this bill has said that trying to convince a little girl who thinks she's a boy, that she's actually a girl, is child abuse. The legislation has to be stopped. The radio ads are designed to raise public awareness of this issue. If you're part of an ARPA chapter in Ontario that's interested in taking part, or if you'd like to help sponsor this campaign, please send an email to info@arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. Pro-life activism on secular campuses. That's what we're talking about on the feature today with Raymond Kobitz. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about who you are and your position. You're with a pro-life club at a university campus on the Lower Mainland in BC.
I'm the treasurer of the pro-life group on campus at the University of the Fraser Valley. It's a group where we kind of discuss issues, pro-life issues. We try to generate discussion, we have events, and we try to be a light on campus.
You had an event, an art display, celebrating life. First of all, just a brief description of what your group does or did and what the purpose of this whole thing was.
So part of our vision as a pro-life group on campus is to generate discussion and kind of inform people on campus, students, what's happening. And the event we did was a 3-day art display. And how we did is we talked to our local high school, the high school where the president and myself attended back in the day, and we asked if the art class would be interested in doing an art project for us. And so the topic of the display was the value of life. And they were given that as their topic, and they could take it where they wanted. And many of them touched in on the value of human life and what that means, both from conception to natural death, and they did a short write-up on all of their pieces, which were mostly done as paintings.
I had a look at some of the pictures you posted on social media. I didn't see any graphic, you know, anti-abortion messages or imagery or anything like that. And yet, there was a sign on the door warning people going into this display that this might trigger something. It was they call it a trigger warning. What was that about?
So to understand how the trigger warning came about, we have to go back to last spring where we held an event. And every spring, our club tries to have quite a public display in order to show that we're still around and that this discussion needs to happen. And last year, we did a flag display. As you may be aware, it's where we had 10,000 pink and blue flags representing the 100,000 abortions that happen a year in Canada. And when we did this display, there was quite a bit of backlash from certain groups of the university. A lot of students felt that they were being traumatized and they were reliving difficult circumstances. And there was a counter-protest, and a lot of flack was thrown at the university for allowing us there. And so this year, as we went forward, one of the things the university really wanted was to make sure that that wouldn't happen again, there wouldn't be so much negative press, and that we would be having trigger warnings so that people wouldn't stumble upon us. So they made sure we were stuck in a room with closed doors.
What kind of reaction did the display actually get? I mean, were there any students who claimed to have been triggered, any protests this time trying to shut you down or anything?
No, this year, as we did the event, since it was stuck in the back corner with doors closed, there weren't anybody protesting it. And I think the reason that this was the case is because this is where they want us. I think they think they've won when they've sent us to a corner, the doors are closed, there's trigger warnings up. This is the place where they want to have this discussion out of the public eye, in a corner where people aren't going to stumble upon it. And I think that's the sad part about kind of how the discussion is going, that they're ideally happy when this is not being discussed.
So have they won then?
Well, they think they have, but as I've been talking with the president and with other people, we look at last week when there was no discussion on this issue and this week where there is lots of discussion. I think that's somewhere where we've gained a lot of traction. And just from hearing around classes on the university, in classes not related to this topic, there have been profs discussing what this was and how this was involved and how this all came about. So I think the fact that the discussion is happening is opening the ears to people that this issue is still around and it's still important.
What's really behind this, though? I mean, you know, you've kind of referenced the notion that they're trying to marginalize and stick you off in a room in a corner somewhere where nobody will pay attention. I mean, Falun Gong, you know, that's a long-standing issue in terms of the history of China and a lot of violence and a lot of nasty things going on there. The folks in support of the Falun Gong movement have had displays on campus, and there's no trigger warnings there.
Yeah, it's interesting, because just last September, they did have an event, and there were paintings showing torture scenes and organ harvesting and truly brutal atrocities. And it was done with doors open and somebody inviting you in, and I walked in, and it was quite a shocking thing to see, and it was eye-opening, and it was good to have on a campus. Interestingly enough, there was a good comment from John Dykstra, who mentioned that it's so much easier to condemn someone else's sins and to look at persecutors of that religion and to think that, of course, they're doing something wrong, we want to publicize that and be in the right side of history. But it's so much more difficult when it's an event looking inward, because this is our country, this is Canada, done with taxpayer dollars funding abortions, and to have this discussion about self-critiquing is extremely difficult.
So, obviously, you're not giving up. You were relegated to a corner this year, but you're going to keep going? You're going to keep trying to promote this issue and this cause?
Yeah, for sure. And we're in discussions with the event coordinators and how this happened. And to be clear, so that everyone knows, we agreed to where we were and we agreed to having trigger warnings. And the reason we did that is because, like I said before, if we don't agree to it and we try to make a stand there, no event happens. And we think that having an event, even if it's not ideal, is going to be the only way we're going to be able to generate discussion, have a little bit of credibility going forward, that we've tried it in this way. We think it's an infringement on free speech, and we can use this as leverage in the future. And for sure, we won't be silent.
Raymond, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.